Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, ranked number one podcast by Canadian financial advisors in the 2021 Environics Advisor Digital Experience Study. Portfolio manager Patrice Quirion is focused on finding growth at a reasonable price. When looking for investments, he asks, how do we go about finding good companies that might have been overlooked? This approach results in Patrice building his portfolios with three categories: quality growth, quality defensive, and quality cyclical. He believes most of his opportunities will come from quality cyclical stocks. Patrice manages Fidelity Global Concentrated Equity Fund and International Concentrated Equity Fund. That's for Canadian investors. Speaking to host Pamela Ritchie, Patrice reflects on the last 18 months since the March 2020 correction, sharing that markets have bounced back strongly, evaluations are moving up, earnings estimates reflect a better future, and large amounts of liquidity have been put into the system, resulting in some parts of the market being more profitable. As someone who looks globally for opportunities, Patrice shares which geographic sectors are a current focus, including exposure to emerging markets. He'll also speak to inflation and interest rates, ESG in his portfolios, and market reactions and psychology, among other topics. Today's podcast was recorded on September 29th, 2021, as a session during our recent Access 2021 event. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Great to see you, Patrice.
Pleasure
here we
to
are
be here.
In person. Oh my goodness, real people in person. Fantastic to see you here. It's been an unbelievable year and a half in the markets, and since we saw each other in person probably last. What is still interesting to you in this market? Have we seen all the interesting moves?
Well, it's very interesting, to say the least, that we're asking this question at this point. Is anything interesting left in this market? We just come such a long way from only 18 months ago that, yeah, it's pretty phenomenal that we're already at the stage where we need to start asking these questions.
But actually, seriously, where how do you find interesting? I mean, you take a look at quality at a reasonable price. Some will say prices are not reasonable. Mm-hmm. We did see a pullback, for instance, yesterday, but we haven't seen a whole lot of them and they don't last very long. How do you find the opportunities in this market?
Yeah, I think it's important to acknowledge upfront that the set of opportunities is maybe a little bit less interesting than what it's been for the past 18 months. We've seen the markets bouncing back very strongly, valuation moving up, earnings estimates reflecting a better future. We've seen a huge amount of liquidity put into the system that's led to some parts of the market being maybe a little bit more frothy. So the question now is much more less of a market call as a whole, but like specifically, where do we go to find those opportunities? To your point, where do we find those? It depends really on our approach. In my case, it's always been to focus on finding quality companies that are offered at a reasonable price or attractive price. And that universe, or in a way I define it as the intersection, if we want, of the value universe and the quality universe, has gotten really slim over the past little while. Like quality stocks are now trading at about a 25% premium to the rest of the market. That is three times higher than the historical average. So we've seen a lot of money sort of chasing the same types of stocks. And how do we go about still finding good companies that might have been overlooked or that didn't benefit to the same extent as the rest of the market is the challenge that I put myself up to every single day. And it comes in a couple ways for me. It's to find either quality stocks that are not universally recognized as being high quality stocks. So usually businesses that have been changing to some extent or to a large extent over a past like number of years. And if I can use an example to illustrate that, that's in a portfolio, we'll start with like a very large cap company that everyone knows. Let's talk about General Electric, which for a decade literally has been seen as a fairly poor company, like burdened with issues from the past. And they've put a lot of those issues with G Capital, with the over-leveraged balance sheet behind them. And now you look at the stock over the past year and you're left with a pretty clean, not perfectly clean yet, but pretty clean set of assets that are high quality assets in a stock that is not trading as a very high valuation quality stock. So this is one example on the large cap, but there's not thousands of those. So it requires more work to find these types of opportunities.
It requires more work, and it also, I mean, just talk a little bit about market reactions in terms of, I mean, there's been a ton of anxiety that we've all mm-hmm. lived through. We've seen the markets go through anxiety, also euphoria. Mm-hmm. How do you use some of those pieces of sort of the psychology?
Yeah, and this is a very good point. And a big part of what I try to do is, yes, let's try to find quality stocks that are maybe overlooked or misunderstood. But I think a greater source of idea generation at this point, and truthfully over the past few years, it's been leading portfolio managers like myself trying to find these kind of companies to be increasingly contrarian. So basically stemming from the belief that the market tends to overreact to trends that become clear, you can take advantage of those overreaction to find good companies that went through a difficult period. And it can be like a broad market period of risk aversion, like we've seen post-COVID, which creates like obviously a very fertile like hunting ground for contrarian investors. But it doesn't need to be a broad market sell-off. It can be a sector or a geography or a specific little set of companies somewhere that are going out of favor, usually because of short-term events. And by doing the work and taking a longer-term horizon than most other investors are willing to take, and by thinking of reasonable valuation, not on the earnings of this year or next year, but thinking of valuation on the normalized environment and looking for those good quality companies that are discounted versus what they would typically earn into a normalized environment, just creates a lot of the types of ideas that I end up putting into the portfolios I manage.
I want you to help us get a picture of how you're positioned ultimately at this point. And, you know, we'll talk about some of the factors, the macro factors that come into that as mm-hmm. well. But, you know, give us a sense of how you're positioned at this point.
Right. So the way I like to think about my positioning, I classify the quality stocks of interest in three buckets. I call them the quality growth stocks, quality defensive stocks, and quality cyclical stocks. And if I was to summarize at a high level, where I've been finding the most number of ideas over the past few years now has been into that quality cyclical bucket. And we can talk about the macro in a minute, but that's really been the main source. By the way, this is not always where we will find those. There are periods in time, although defensive stocks and growth stocks tend to be more expensive, where on the relative basis, there are points in time where those are the most relatively interesting ideas. And if we go back a number of years, you could buy growth stocks, like really high quality growth stocks for very reasonable prices. I don't think we are there yet. And in general, I would say that in cyclicals and in more like the value part. So if I think of my value and quality universe intersecting, when there's not much of an intersection between the two, it forces me to go like more towards one side or the other. And my impression for the past few years is the more interesting of these two groups is the more value part of the market that I think has more opportunities to deliver abnormal returns going forward, as opposed to the very high quality parts of the market, where I think a lot of those moves have been put in place over the past few years.
I mean, when you talk about value, and there are many different components that go into sort of painting that thesis for you, I know, but let's get a sense of how you see, I mean, your thoughts on inflation, ultimately interest rates, mm-hmm. where that's going, and how you need to be positioned to either, you know, to take, lean in and take advantage of where you think we're going. Where do you think we're going on a couple of different macro levels?
Right. So I'm happy to basically give you some thoughts on the macro side. But to me, what's interesting is not necessarily purely based on a macro view. It's always about what are the stocks discounting in terms of assumptions we need to believe in. And if those translate into a macro scenario that we believe is possible or not will basically guide a lot of the investment decision. What we've been noticing for the past few years is the assumptions you need to believe in to buy a value stock or a reopening story or cyclically like geared business have been that we weren't yet pricing like a full economic recovery, and that's what led to the opportunity. Where are we today? Like, obviously, post-vaccine in late 2020, we've seen a fairly dramatic move on some of those stocks as the market went from not believing or not willing to look forward to far enough to a normalized world to suddenly looking towards that and incorporating that into the valuations. So we had, I would call it like a fairly typical early cycle, cyclically driven, like value driven recovery, like think of consumer discretionary, industrials, like commodities to an extent, like leading the market. And what's interesting is this is like very, this is very typical. And it's also very typical that you see a bit of a pause in that. But what we've seen from, call it like March of 2021 up until like maybe just the past few days, is we've seen a big reversal of that. Yeah. And I think it was the market essentially saying there is uncertainty around this recovery. The timing of it is unclear. What happens with the future waves of COVID is unclear. What's happening to supply chain creates issues to like short-term like ability to fulfill demand. And the market sort of went back into a somewhat risk-off approach to valuing the various parts of the market. And I think that's what's leading to the opportunity today is that, in my opinion, the weakness that we have seen in like leading indicators over the past like few months and that rhetoric around having already seen peak growth and just peak economic sentiment, I think is maybe a little bit misleading us at this point. We've seen like growth decelerating just because growth has been amazingly strong on very weak comparables from a year ago. And I think what is leading to weaker growth from a supply chain constraint and maybe some of the Delta variant COVID waves like hitting some geographies, especially hard at the moment, in my view, that will not like derail the economy, but postpone some of that recovery. So the consumer is still in great shape. And I think what we are not consuming or seeing in terms of growth this year is basically being pushed to next year. And maybe that pretty quick like move away from an early cycle way the market is pricing the various components of the market could come back as we start looking not at what's happening in the back half of this year, but what's likely to happen in 2022.
It's very interesting. What about the role ultimately of, I mean, let's bring up ESG, how you use it either to look at companies, whether you assume it as a trend within your portfolio. I mean, how do you approach this? People are increasingly thinking about it. It's important, clearly.
Yeah. ESG has evolved like tremendously over the past few years. And it evolved in a way where it's not simply like thinking of how do we build ESG products? It's how do we incorporate that philosophy in a way, that approach, what we're demanding from companies into every time we meet a company's management team, how do we think about portfolio construction? And it has a ripple effect in all of our portfolios at this stage. How I'm personally incorporating it is because I'm always influenced by paying a reasonable price, it leads to maybe at times difficulty to go buy the concept stocks or the stocks that are universally seen as the companies that will save the planet over time. So whatever, like electric car manufacturers or alternative energy stocks. So this is not what I'm trying to accomplish in my portfolios. There is a part of the portfolio construction to me, which is avoiding the bad actors and putting a lot of focus on what's the environmental footprint of the portfolio. And just as a side note, like at the moment, my global funds and international funds have about like one third of the CO2 footprint of the index. So this is something I really keep in mind. I think we see that in the numbers across the portfolio. But really, it goes much deeper than that. It's about engaging, and it's about making sure that companies across like the entirety of the economic sectors, which are the companies putting the most focus on improving their business, on being good to their employees, good to the environment, and on good governance. And from my perspective, it's really putting the focus on the companies that at the end of the day, we can be proud of what they're trying to accomplish. Like, we don't want to own stocks, or I don't want to own stocks where I feel like a little bit ashamed of showing what's in the portfolio. I want to own companies that I support into their vision of what they're trying to accomplish. And I think that path of improvement is really what we're trying to guide as ESG engagement becomes more and more important across our funds.
It's really great to get your thoughts on that and you know how it's sort of an overarching piece of the way you approach the communications of companies, which yeah. I know you're in touch with all the time. Tell us a little bit about the geographic sector mix. You mentioned that a minute ago. You have access to, you know, invest globally. Mm-hmm. How much of the global versus sector sort of tilt is there at this moment?
Right. So I would say that at this point in time, and it's been the case for the past few years, I think the sector construction will have a greater impact than the geographic buildup of the portfolio. So a lot of my focus over the past years has been like, where are we finding the most companies that seem to be mispricing a normalized future in their case? And that has led me in terms of sector weights to be, as I mentioned earlier, to be a lot more into the cyclical parts of the economy. So if we look at the portfolio today, it's about 50% that is exposed to industrial, service, and consumer discretionary types of businesses. And it's always keeping the quality framework on that. So what does it mean to go into a quality cyclical in the consumer discretionary sector, for instance? It could mean owning the auto manufacturers right now, which I think is one of the pockets of the market that should face good pent-up demand. Now the market is somewhat disliking these stocks because of all the supply chain issues around semiconductors, notably, but goes to the point where I think the consumer demand is there and that pent-up demand will be sort of exposed and take place when those supply chain constraints come to an end at some point through the course of 2022. So this is one example where someone might say, but those are not high-quality stocks. So my approach is always, I don't mind going in some parts of the market that in average might be lower quality if this is where the mispricing seems to be taking place, but I will always go back and buy the best company from a balance sheet, a profitability, a predictability to the business model, and that will lead me to certain stocks versus others. I can use the example of, around the reopening like thematic that we've been seeing for the past year. Someone could make a case that the travel sector will come back, therefore like airline travel will come back. And how do we get exposure to that? I'm in the opinion that this will come back, but with the quality framework, it's really hard to justify owning an airline. So my approach is let's use that exposure or let's build that exposure through the supply chain and let's buy like a commercial aerospace aftermarket company that has a lot more stable of a profitability stream, of a business model that's more predictable, less at risk, less financial leverage. So that's always how I try to bring that quality, even when there are times like now that I think the market is paying us to take a little bit more risk at the moment. And this is how I'm trying to do it. So, on a sector perspective.
Okay, so perfect. On a sector perspective, and we started out that question sort of geographic versus right. sector to which, and having said all that, question coming in from an investor, do you have exposure to emerging markets? And if yes, you know, where?
Right, absolutely, great question. Because on the geographic side, I actually think emerging markets is an increasingly attractive part of the globe where to invest. And emerging markets are extremely wide. It goes from companies that have their own like domestic growth stories to some that are exporters to the Western world, to some like China that are like big consumers of infrastructure and things like that. So they all have their different stories. So I think to talk of emerging markets widely can be misleading. I think right now what I'm spending more and more of my time on is starting to shift the allocations within my emerging market sleeve. So to put things in perspective, I am now slightly overweight emerging markets in my global funds. It's about 16% of the portfolios. But maybe more notable that that small overweight is where are we taking that exposure and moving that exposure? And I would say that over the course of the past few quarters, for me, it's been to move away from countries that are basically tied to the growth of the US and of Europe. So think of South Korea as like a large exporter, think of Mexico, and starting to take some of these positions and move them in other emerging markets, which at the moment are more hard hit. And I would say on that, like two examples, maybe first Southeast Asia, given the wave of COVID that we are seeing at the moment, they are sort of in their peak disruption phase. And it's leading to interesting ideas there, like notably like stocks exposed to the consumer spending into that geography. So this is an area where I've been spending more time. And the other one is obviously China, which has been massively out of favor for the past 6 months or so. Obviously a lot of uncertainty. And I think to the point where now the market is pretty much pricing in almost an unrealistic scenario of what the government might be trying to achieve. The market is extremely fearful of the situation. And as a result, I think it's leading to interesting ideas sort of at the moment into the Chinese market. And this is definitely a part of the portfolio that I am feeling like more and more inclined to add here.
So it's so interesting, given what you've just said and opportunities globally, but not necessarily and sector focused, where ultimately do you think this fits? And I'm sort of curious how your philosophy fits into an investor's portfolio. And ultimately, well, I'll ask you about the next bit in a sec. First of all, let's start with where you think it fits in an investor's portfolio.
Right. So I think the funds I manage can be a great diversifier into anyone's portfolio. First, like having global exposure, I think is always a plus. Like you buy companies that should expect to generate the same sort of returns over time, but exposed to different geographies. So you sort of mitigate some of the idiosyncratic country risk. And I know it has not felt this way for the past 10 years or so, where the United States has led the world in terms of stock market performance by a wide margin. But this is not always the case. And I think it's especially important to remind ourselves of that when we could be near or potential inflection points in the leadership of the market. And this is maybe where I can take a moment to speak on. I think the great benefit of the diversification of these funds can bring is not so much a global diversification, but the contrarian approach that I bring to those. And by being exposed to parts of the market that tend to be out of favor, that have maybe not performed well over the past few years, I'm trying to eventually like get ahead of building positions ahead of potential inflection points.
Right.
And inflection points can be painful.
Does that help you be sort of reflective? We're actually going on about a minute here, but just a couple of reflections for the last, you know, last year or so, year and a half, mm-hmm. since the pandemic.
The last year has definitely like opened us to reflecting on what took place since COVID happened. And maybe my greatest reflection on all that is, I think it's important to acknowledge that we are not always in a position to perfectly predict what will happen to us. The market just throws uncertainty at investors constantly. Sometimes it's small, maybe somewhat meaningless uncertainty. Sometimes it's COVID-19. And I think what's important is, how do we react to what the market does as a result of these unforeseen events? And to me, the greatest takeaway is, look at where we started the discussion. It's pretty amazing that only 18 months later, we're already asking, like, is there anything left that's interesting in this market?
It is, actually.
And the importance of, therefore, like not panicking, stretching your time horizon when the market does panic is probably one of the best opportunity to take advantage of the situation and deliver outperformance. And that's certainly what I'm trying to do as a contrarian investor, is make sure we capitalize on these periods of dislocation, periods where stocks are mispriced versus a normalized future, and take advantage of that. And I think we've done a pretty good job over the past year to do just that.
Petrus Karyon, a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you
pleasure
for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts, and don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thank you. See you tomorrow.